queer friends, are you ready to be inspired? Welcome to Season 5 of Coming Out and Beyond, a podcast that shares stories from the LGBTQIA+ community. Here's your host, Anne-Marie Zanzel.
Hi, this is Anne-Marie Zanzel, and I want to welcome you back to another episode of Coming Out and Beyond, LGBTQIA+ stories. I want to welcome to this show today Marcy McCary. Her resiliency resume includes surviving every kind of abuse, nearly every natural disaster, health condition that left her bedridden overnight, and stole more than 10 years of her life, being abandoned by a Christian ministry in Africa when she came out as a lesbian. When the ministry refused to fly her home or renew her work visa, Marcy started making, selling, or trading handmade greeting cards for food to feed her and her 14-month-old daughter. When she was 24, she woke up suddenly very ill. She went to every type of doctor and specialist she could find. No one seemed to be able to help. So she studied to be a registered orthomolecular health practitioner. That's a mouthful. And graduated the three-year program in a year with first-class honors and worked to heal herself using food and nutrition as medicine. Marcy has been helping people heal themselves ever since and coaching people to harness their resilience to overcome the challenges they face. To bounce, not break. Marcy is the author of She Births, a modern woman's guidebook for an ancient rite of passage, and has been published in several magazines, including Viva, Complete Mother, and Inner Island Child. Her stories and writings have appeared in Bearing Witness by Dr. Lisa Duran and Lisa Carone, as well as in several blogs. She is currently a re-emerging speaker with over 10,000 stage performances to her name and hundreds of workshops, presentations, and speeches under her pre-digital era belt. Marcy speaks on topics of importance to women, entrepreneurs, the LGBT community, welcoming religious groups, and marginalized youth, all with the focus on resilience. When she isn't speaking, working on her second book, or teaching, you can probably find her cuddled up with her Cornish Rex Cosmo and a cup of herbal tea. Marcy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm very excited to welcome you to the show. It sounds like you've been through a lot and you have navigated a lot of trauma in your life.
And very much so.
So when I ask this question of tell me your story, you're probably going to go, which one?
Right.
So tell me the story that you want to share today, Marcy.
So I'm going to tell you the story of my coming out, and I'm going to do it a little bit Reader's Digest version.
Of course.
I actually had the joy of coming out twice in my life. So the first time I came out, I was a missionary. I was in Africa, South Africa. I was married, as all good fundamentalist Christian girls do. We get married young as a virgin. So I had no experience before I was married, except that I had kissed a few girls and I really liked it. And then I thought, oh God, now I'm going to hell. So I just kind of like put that away. I got married very young, had a baby right away. There was a lady on my unit, on my team. One day she just pinned me against a wall and kissed me. And that was shocking. First of all, I was married. So that was like terrible because now I've cheated on my husband. But also, I really liked it and I didn't know what to do with that. It was a lot of stress and strain. 3 months later, I told, and my husband at the time knew that I had had experiences with women and that this was something, you know, I was fighting and resisting, because if you were not a practicing homosexual, then it was okay. You know,
right. So as long as you could be a homosexual, as long as you were celibate.
Celibate, exactly. So it was like I was doing the right thing to get married and just suppress my homosexual tendencies. I came out to him and said, listen, I think I have feelings for this other person. And he's like, yes, I know. I've seen it happening for 3 months. I was like, well, cool. Like, you didn't say anything? That was really strange. We were staying home to home in host homes. And when the host home, the lady at the host home, found out that I was coming out as gay, she called the ministry and said that she wasn't comfortable having me in her home anymore. So, and this is the person who delivered my child. So I had an actual real relationship with her. So they kicked me out. I left with my baby on my back and just what I could carry. And the ministry said, so if you leave, if this is what you want to do, you do know that we're not going to fly you home. and we're not going to renew your work visa, which essentially meant we're stranding you in the country and we're not going to give you a means to be able to work, because without a work visa, you can't work. Right. But I knew I had already tried, like they had sent me away on a forced retreat to try to make me.
Immersion therapy.
Well, no, not exactly. It was just a silent retreat. They're like, go and seek God and ask him to heal you and, you know, change your heart in this matter. I did. And they said the only person I was allowed to speak with at this retreat center was the pastor in charge. Mm-hmm. And I was having a bit of a crisis. So I went to him to talk and he closed his door and said, I'm also gay. And there's nothing wrong with you. You are perfectly and wonderfully made.
Wow.
And I caught the irony of sending me away to a retreat center to get cured and then having this pastor say, I am one of you. You are one of me. You know, it was just this, oh, just so much beautiful relief. And he gave me a book. I can't remember the name of it, but it was a book written by a South African. I think they were in a college or university, and they had studied all of the scriptures that were used as a way to, you know, make homosexuals feel like they're
clobber passages. All the clobber passages. Yeah.
Yeah. Clobber. That's a good way to say it. Yeah. Anyways,
it's actually what we say in the queer community, LGBTQ community. I mean, the clobber passages are like the ones from Romans, mm-hmm. to Timothy. All of those are the passage, Leviticus, also Genesis with Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay. And so, you know, they use all those passages out of context.
Yes.
And also, you know, the word homosexual is not used in the Bible until 1946. So.
Yeah,
it's just a messed up system.
Well, and that's really what the book outlined. Like, this is the real what the message was supposed to be and how it's been conflated so that now it's being used in this way. And that was such a huge relief coming from my fundamentalist background and feeling like I had other answers to hold on to. In any case, the ministry had sent me away to get cured. Excuse me, didn't work. Then they sort of said we were doing this there's like a little chapel and they were saying, we're going to do this special prayer meeting. Everybody on the whole campus gathered in this room and this man I'd never seen before apparently was going to give the message. So we're kind of like sitting there and all of a sudden everybody's laying hands on me. And it was an exorcism. Didn't work because apparently I don't have demons. So so that was very embarrassing. It felt very... To feel so dirty as a born-again fundamentalist Christian, the thought that you were so dirty that they think you are demonic was very, very difficult for me. I think it was really at that point that I started to separate from my faith. It was very like little bits of it. I just started to like rethink why I was believing what I believed. In any case, I was stuck in the country with my daughter. And I met a woman named Franco. So I back up again. So I went to this person on my team's house, like her aunt's house. We ended up starting a relationship. We moved in with the gay church there, had a person on, like, I don't know, in their congregation, I guess, that had an extra room. And so I was boarding with her. And my partner at the time was also... my partner ended up being very physically abusive and very controlling. She tried to unalive me. So I had to go on the run. Now I'm hiding in a country that I don't know. And it was very stressful and it was very confusing because I thought that women would be safe, right? Like, I think that that's a misnomer that we have as new lesbians when we come out. We think that all women are going to be better than the experiences we may have had with men. And the truth is that people, wounded people, broken people are in both genders. So we still have to do our due diligence, you know? But I was,
I'm going to stop you there because I don't want to get too far into the story without asking some questions before you get moving. So what denomination were you with?
Non-denominational charismatic. And the ministry I was with was interdenominational.
Okay. Where's your husband?
At this time?
Like when you got thrown out or you, like, where was he? Like,
he was standing at the door waving.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
And also that's his child.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The company owed us some money and he kept like 70% of the money, even though he had guaranteed like housing and whatever. And he also required me to have him hold my passport because he was concerned that I would leave the country.
So, are you in the process of coming out later in life? Are you feeling isolated or lost, cut off from friends and family, or just trying to figure out what is the next step for you? Well, I have a wonderful coaching program called Lotus Group Coaching. It is for people who are female identifying, cis or trans, or non-binary folks comfortable in those spaces. And we provide emotional, spiritual, and intellectual support for people who are in the process of coming out later in life. We discuss many things in our community, but what's most important is that you have a community of others who understand. Each one of the coaches in the program have come out later in life, and everybody who is a member of our program is somewhere in the process. So if you are seeking community and you want a soft place to land, go to my website, amoryzanzel.com, and book a connection call. We would love to talk to you.
With our child, which I mean, with what money, right? Like, I have no means to do that. But the problem was that because of sex trafficking and et cetera, where I was in South Africa, it wasn't very safe. And the building I was living in, they did random checks in the middle of the night where everybody had to show up, show their ID, and they would check your apartment. So there were times where I was hiding in the back of a closet with my 14-month-old just praying that she doesn't make a peep. Because if they found me there, I had no ID. Mm-hmm. And they would have put me in jail mm-hmm. and separated me from my child. Mm-hmm. So all of that was very stressful. It was a very stressful situation.
Well, I think it's actually more than stressful. It sounds like it was traumatic.
That's a good way to put it, for sure. Very, very fear-inducing, you know.
To me, the thought of stranding someone in the country without a means to support themselves is almost... You know, high control religions, they do that to people. They do it to scare them. They do it. I mean, you know, when they said that, they probably were hoping you would step back in line and say, oh I'm not gay. Nope, don't worry about it.
Sorry, yeah. Joking. Funny, joking. Funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but also too, first of all, I love that that pastor said that to you. You know, I was expecting some story of abuse
right
from him. I wonder where he is today.
I know.
You know, his success rate probably really wasn't good in conversion.
Probably not.
In conversion therapy, that's what I meant. But what I found is that there were so many people that totally dropped the ball.
Oh, yeah.
And I agree with you. I see so many of the women that I work with, they assume when they're first coming out to the lesbian community that a woman is safer than a man.
Yes.
And, you know, by and large, most people are, you know, most people are. But what I have found is that when people are like, you know, what had you marry your husband, you know, the same qualities in him, mm-hmm. often find in a female partner, because mm-hmm. we all partner with our primary caregivers. I mean, and hopefully as we grow and get older and learn, we end up working through that stuff. So even if we do partner with somebody that reminds us of our primary caregivers, they've done their own work.
Correct.
So that it's okay. Yeah. But I love that you brought up that point, because so many times women really will go from one abusive relationship to another.
Yep.
And because your relationship with your husband was abusive, goes from one abusive relationship to another. And just because they've switched genders, they think they're going to be safe. And they're
correct. Correct. And until we do the work of understanding why we are attracting those people and why we are okay with that treatment, why that's like feels like home to us, that will continue to happen. And it did happen to me. I was married 4 times, 3 to abusive people, abuse in different ways. And the 4th time I married a woman, actually, I married a woman I met in South Africa, and she moved from South Africa to Canada. Her name was Franco. She's was amazing, still lovely, very good friend. But we found out, 2 weeks after we were married, that she was asexual. And that was not something I could I could be okay with. It was just, that doesn't work for me. And anyway, so let me go back to South Africa.
So absolutely. Well, let me pick you up. So you were talking about leaving that abusive relationship with the first woman.
Yeah. So I got away. I went undercover for a while. And then I went back to the boarding house. In the end, the person I was boarding with, she received a lump sum of money from the army because she had been injured working in the army. And she flew me home. And that's how I got home. Yeah, it was lovely.
That is lovely.
Yeah, it was really, really beautiful.
And home is Canada?
No, well, home was the U.S. at the time. So I'm dual citizen.
Okay.
And I'm in the U.S. now, so.
Okay, all right.
So I came out then. And I was very proud of coming out. I was really happy with the situation. Moved, you know, got flown back and realized that none of my family was going to accept me. And I had to go through a custody battle for my child. Mm-hmm. I really just wanted shared custody. I wasn't trying to like have whole like sole custody. But my stepmother, who had like a bunch of degrees in psychology, I was talking to my ex-husband and I said, you know, I'll see you in court. You know, I'm going to have people on my side, just like you're going to have people on your side. And, you know, I guess we'll see how it all pans out. And he said, are you sure about that? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, Sherry called me. That's my stepmother. Sherry called me and told me that she's going to be on my side in court. And I went to her and said, oh, tell me that this isn't true. And she was like, I think you're a great mother, but I don't think a child should be raised in a two-woman home. So I have to support Matthew. And so that caused a rift that has not healed for me. I was able to still see my daughter, but she lived with Matthew and it was very difficult for me. And it was a difficult...
So did you get custody taken away?
Didn't get taken away, but he had primary custody and I had visitation, you know, couple weekends a month or something. It wasn't really what I wanted. So I went back in the closet. So I ended up dating a man who was basically unable to have sex. So he just, his parts didn't work. So he only could, you know, do other things. And I found that really comfortable, which is funny. And so he was kind of like a transition person. I went back into the closet for 20 years, tried to reform relationships with my family, and that didn't work. The pain and the sort of understanding that I could never be fully me with them was really too much for me to try to overcome. And so we don't have a relationship now, except for my sister and I are really close, but that's really the only relationship I have from that family. I got pregnant outside of wedlock for my son, and I had met this couple, Diane and Jerry. Diane was a Methodist pastor, and I had met them in the ministry when I was touring in the U.S. We had worked at their church a couple times, and we got just really formed a really good, close relationship. And actually, when I was married, they were unable to have children, and I offered to carry their child. I thought about it, and they said, we really think that it's not the right answer for us, but we appreciate that you offered. Like, sure, no problem. And then I came back from Africa, and they're the ones who let me stay with them to get acclimated. Then I had my son, and I was giving my son a bath in their kitchen sink one day, and I started calling them mom and dad, and I was married again, and my dad says to me, he leaves, he was going to work, and he turns around and he said, your mom and I would like to make that official.
Wow.
And I was like, tears, you know, like, you know. And so, yeah, at the age of 24, I was adopted, and it was beautiful. It was just like, they knew who I was. They knew my sexual orientation was not what I was presenting. They knew that I was struggling to be me, and they were like, you are welcome however you are. And that was really beautiful. So my mom actually retired early because the Methodist Church had another split, and they, you know, and she was like, I can't be in a position where I'm supporting the belief that my daughter shouldn't be able to get married. Like, I just can't do that. So she retired early, which was actually such a, I don't know, kind of like a it showed that she really loved me, you know. It was mm-hmm. really special. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. And what Marcy's referring to is the Methodist Church here in the United States has had a split because they refused to ordain gay clergy. And I think it's, they're going to have their meeting next year, I think. I can't remember. But it has caused a big split in the Methodist Church. And so yeah. Some Methodist churches are on the true path of acceptance of all people, while mm-hmm. other Methodist churches are refusing to have queer people ordained.
Yeah, so. And it's also the right to marry, mm-hmm. To perform weddings. So, mm-hmm. but in any case, you know, I came out one peg in the closet. And I spent...
I am just so curious, after all you've suffered, like when you look back, and this is over 20 years ago now.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you think you went, like, you had already, like, done all the hard work. What made you go back into the closet?
I think it was a combination of a couple things. I think that after my first and only relationship, well, my first full relationship with a woman was abusive.
Right.
And then, but before her, I had had a kind of pseudo-sexual relationship with somebody else on a different team. And in the middle of that experience, she was like, we need to pray. And so, like, we had to stop what we were doing, and she needed to pray, and she never wanted to talk to me again. And she it was a very painful rift, because I actually had real feelings for her. Then the thing with Leah happened, and then I started to question whether it was actually true that being gay was a curse. Like, it was a, like, if getting a guy was really easy for me, right?
Well, of course.
I'm feminine and there's a lot of men. So, I mean, it's
yeah. And also, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, it's an easy catch. But I didn't think I could find a healthy relationship with a woman.
So that's really normal.
Yeah.
For people, no, about the praying thing.
Oh, okay.
my wife, her first lover, which she's talked about very openly, was her prayer partner from the Baptist Student Union.
Oh, interesting.
And even like the very first time where, you know, a little something happened, they didn't even have sex, but mm-hmm. it was, they had, you know, a small little kiss. It was no mm-hmm. big deal.
Pretty innocent, yeah.
And, it was, she thought she was going to shoot straight to hell.
Oh, yeah, totally.
She thought, that's it. I'm going to shoot straight to hell. And she did. She went. She never dated, met anybody before. You know, mm-hmm. her partner was her first experience. Oh, she was young. She was like 18.
Yeah.
And wow. But then, like, you know, a year into the relationship, a boy asked her out. And she said, she went back to her. They were having a relationship for the last year and said to mm-hmm. her prayer partner, we don't have to be gay anymore. A man.
That's awesome.
Well, but that's the thing, is that this is why community is so important.
Mm-hmm.
You were still within a community where they believed queer, being gay, LGBTQ, mm-hmm. was so incredibly wrong that they practiced an exorcism on you. So... you know what I mean? It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, like they, like you didn't think that. I'm sure you were thinking some of those things because right. you're like beating yourself up.
For sure.
Like, you know, why can't I just be straight? It would be so much easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what ends up happening is then you, it's very normal for people to start thinking, oh, wait a minute, maybe they're right. So mm-hmm. of course you went back to, you were still surrounded by straight people and religious straight people.
Yeah, and I had lost most of my family, and one of the things my stepmother said was, or she had told my sister, your sister's not actually gay. She just likes to be different. She just likes the attention. And so I started to think, like, maybe that's
true. Right. Yeah.
Like, right. you know.
Right. Well, you know what, Marcy? There's a heck of a lot easier ways to get attention than the way you did it.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
If you really wanted attention, you could have done it some other way. And
I know.
You know, and also too, like you could have been with men if you just wanted to be have attention, and which was wrong in that community as well. But
yeah.
We all know charismatic, non-denominational. It's like the sin of sin, which is sort of ridiculous. Yeah. So you had your so then keep going.
Okay, so then I went back in the closet. I got married two other times to men. Then I was married to my last husband for 14 years, pretty long time. It wasn't a very close relationship. Like, we were more friends than anything. We had different separate bedrooms and for 10 years. And, you know, we kind of just chalked it up to the fact that I was co-sleeping because I was an attachment parent and he was doing nighttime work on his computer. So we just chalked it up to that. But I was actually really comfortable not having him in the bed with me. Anyway, I said to him multiple times throughout the course of the relationship, I really miss women. Like, I'm missing that feeling of being with a woman. And his answer was always, well, if you want to get a girlfriend, then I get to get a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I was like, at the time, though, I didn't understand. I was seeing things differently at that time. Now I would understand that that would be an equal, you know, situation. But at the time, I was like, no, if you want to have a guy, that's fine. Because I don't, that's not no competition to me. But if a girl is your secondary partner, then that's direct competition. Like, that's not fair. He's like, but I'm not bi. So that's not fair.
Well, and also your emotional, spiritual, intellectual, and physical needs are going to be met by a woman. So I'm just curious about the jealous, I'm just curious about that. That's like, because a lot of times women who come out later in life, like, they're so glad when their husband has a girlfriend. They don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, you know, my ex-husband started dating his now partner like 6 weeks after I started dating my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just relief.
Yeah.
Honestly. So I'm curious.
When I found out that he dated somebody briefly. Mm-hmm. A few years after I left, I was really happy for him. But at the time, I mean, he was the only income earner. He was very controlling financially. So it was difficult for me to feel stable financially without that support. I didn't want to lose my children. I felt really, it was less about him finding somebody else to sleep with and more about that person could take my place in the home.
Got it. Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense given what happened with your first child.
Yeah. Exactly.
Perfect sense. Yep. Okay. Got it. I was just curious. I love to hear people's thoughts processes. I'm like, okay, how did you get it? Now I get it. Okay.
No problem. So, and the thing that precipitated the end of the marriage was that Franco, who I had this magical moment with in South Africa 20 years before, we had not had any kind of sexual exchange or even real big kissing. Like, it was very innocent, but there was just something really special about her. She called me and said, so I've had two people die at my work of heart attacks, like out of the blue in the last 2 weeks. And I don't want to die without saying what I need to say. And she's like, I want you to know that I have been in love with you for 20 years. And I don't expect any action on your part. I know that you're married. I'm far, far away. Like, it's fine. I just needed to say it. And I was like, I have never let you go either. And so 3 days after I started talking to her on the phone, I told my husband that it was over. And it became a whole lot of stress. And in Canada, you can't just divorce somebody. You have to be separated for a year. Mm-hmm. And so I lived in the home, but was separated. That was fun. And then it was very difficult. And then Franco came over. She was always very kind to me. She was the nicest person. Until recently, she was my nicest, most kind-hearted, most loving person. But there was a lot of, like, as a full-grown adult now and not in my real young years where I had met her before, there were a lot of, like, cultural things that were difficult for us to navigate. She was very afraid of germs, very afraid of semen, very grossed out by body fluids. And that made any kind of intimacy really difficult for me. And then we got married and she was just like, I'm like not interested at all. And I just couldn't do it. So we ended up, she told me that I could go elsewhere to satisfy those needs. And so I did. And I said, we are risking what we have because connections with women are really deep, you know? And so she said, I understand that, but I mean, I don't really have any other options. So I met somebody on a dating site and I just recently left that relationship 4 months ago. And she was also abusive. Can't diagnose. I'm not a person to diagnose. I don't have that degree, but definitely feels like narcissism, feels like borderline personality disorder. My therapist thinks that those things were going on. So It was very painful, very confusing, that relationship. A lot of trauma bonding. That was fun to try to get disengaged from. A year and a half of, no, 2.5 years of therapy. And I finally was able to break free. It took me 8 tries to get away.
Is that with the person you met? Okay, not Franco.
Not Franco, no. We divorced and she moved back to South Africa. We're still in touch. She's doing really well over there. It just wasn't the right fit after so many years had passed. And there's really no way for us to find that out without doing what we did because we were too far away, right? So we did what we had to do. Would I do it again? No, because I learned from it. But at the time, that's what we had. This last relationship was probably the hardest relationship I've ever been in. I've never experienced the kinds of maltreatment and disrespect that I did in that relationship. Also with somebody born female, they started testosterone and grew facial hair and had top surgery. The top surgery I was fine with, but the facial hair was difficult for me. Being with somebody who's called sir all the time was difficult for my identity. And although, like, even I talked to Sean about it, and Sean's like, but your identity has nothing to do with them. You can be queer, gay, and still be in other kinds of relationship connections. But I don't think that somebody who, I don't think people who haven't suffered coming out the way I have, if you haven't gone through that, you don't understand how important it is to you to hold on to that identity, how you kind of like, you fought so hard that you want to maintain that visibility in your community, you know?
I completely understand that. And, you know, sometimes people who identify with lesbians stay with trans men. Sometimes they don't. And I think that it's really, I think it's an individual journey. I think it's an individual journey with each couple. Typically, people who start testosterone often have, you know, they can have a lot of multi-level emotional swings.
Actually, her, and I say her because she uses all the pronouns, but her emotions actually settled quite a bit after she started testosterone.
Oh, that's good.
Which was really great. Yeah. But the other stuff was too much. And anyway, I ended the relationship. And I am happy to say that I, after much therapy, I understand now what love is supposed to feel like, which for somebody with my whole traumatic background from childhood on, right, that's a complicated question to answer. You don't really understand what home feels like or love feels like. You sort of just go on what you have experienced. And I finally am in a partnership with somebody. We're long distance, so we're taking it fairly slow, but they are very emotionally healthy. Very balanced. They have great boundaries. They respect my boundaries. There's lots of communication. You know, fighting is really minimal. Like, there's so much peace that it's disconcerting for somebody like me. You're like,
well, yeah, when you have too much peace, when you're used to chaos, you think something's wrong.
Well, that, well, not even that something's wrong, just that it feels very much like the quiet before the storm. Like, this is reminiscent of that quiet part of the other relationship.
True.
Or the blow up, right?
True. Well, you know, a lot of times when people start dating somebody that's the correct person for them, when they come from a chaotic background, often they're it's just uncomfortable, like, to have, like, quiet and peace. And
well, how can you just sit next to me for 2 hours and, like, not talk and you were totally fine? Like, what is that? But, yeah.
So tell me about the work that you do now. You've been through an awful lot. It has been hard for you to claim your authenticity, claim that you're queer and a lesbian. And I completely understand why it's been so hard for you and wanting to be able to be with a woman. I totally get that. Or someone who identifies as a woman. So, you know, what do you do? What do you have? What have you done to turn this, all this pain into something good?
So I'm a writer. Like, my first love is writing. And I'm actually working on a book of stories of my life that are centered around the subject of resilience. And I do public speaking and keynote speaking on the subject of resilience. You know, that's my company is Bounce, Don't Break. And I focus primarily on equipping women to be resilient and supporting it from a feminine female-centric standpoint. Like, I think a lot of times people think that to be strong or resilient, we have to adapt or adopt, I guess, masculine traits. And I think we lose a lot of our sort of center when we try to be something we're not. So I do coaching, and I'm doing the speaking, obviously, workshops, those kinds of things. And then the book is coming out, and I have a course in the works as well. So that people can be able to download and do at home.
If you had an opportunity to tell people about resiliency, especially women, what would you say to them?
I would say that the two most important things when you're talking about resilience are, one, look up. So just like when you're walking in the dark and you have to look over where you're walking to the horizon to be able to see in your periphery what's beneath, we get so stuck on details around us that we get sucked into the now and we forget that there's something waiting for us in the future. Mm-hmm. And it is the hope of what's coming that will get us to that place, right? The second one is that this world is designed to make us hard and to make us lose our childlike aspects. Yeah. So holding on to curiosity and holding on to choosing, rather, to stay soft in this world is a gift to yourself and a gift to the world. When we choose to keep our heart soft and tender, and we're curious about asking questions that will lead us into a new version of ourselves, I think that that's how we can use, you know, our circumstances. You know, people say, oh, everything happens for a reason. And I say, bullcrap.
Bullcrap. I don't really like that.
Does not happen for a reason. But you can find a lesson in most things that you can learn something from, or you can, even if it's just about yourself, like, look how amazingly resilient I was in that moment, right? You can find something to learn from in that situation.
Well, I always say, when people say, oh, everything happens for a reason, I don't believe that. I've been through some tragedies in my life, and those tragedies did not happen for any kind of reason. Yeah, they're senseless. But I do agree with you. I do think we have an opportunity to make meaning from that tragedy.
Correct.
If so, we choose. We don't have to. There's no rule that makes you have to. Yeah. I do think that it's part of being resilient, too, from making meaning from suffering.
Yes, absolutely.
And yeah, and I think that's, I mean, I think that really can help you, because it can help you in the end. I agree with Marcy. You know, being soft is a choice. Being kind, being compassionate is a choice, just as much as being angry and hard. Right. And so making that choice to do that every day, sometimes it's not easy, but it is possible. It is possible.
For sure.
So how do people find you, Marcy?
Well, will we be able to link social media?
Absolutely.
I'll send those to you. And then
I have all of them.
Okay, wonderful. So Bounce Don't Break, so www.bouncedon'tbreak.com is a great place to connect. I'm also starting a Facebook group, which I will give you the link to, and it's going to be a private group, and I'll be talking directly to people in that group and giving them tips and information and giving them like first dibs and freebies and stuff. So it'd be a great place for people to go. Yeah.
So did you have a coming out song, Marcy?
Yes, it's the Indigo Girls. It's the Not the Power of Two, which I also love. Closer to Fine.
I love Closer to Fine.
Yeah.
That is a great movie. If you've seen Barbie this year, who is it? Brandi Carlile and her wife sang a version of it. And I think they did Closer to Fine. It may have been Closer to Fine. It may have been another song. But it was one of the Indigo Girls songs. So how about a book or a movie that changed your perspective on life?
The Dance of the Dissident Daughter. Are you familiar with the book?
I've heard of it, but I'm not.
Yeah. So basic premise is that a woman who is from a fundamentalist Christian background and very devout, like I was, started to reconsider all of the male-centric language in the Bible, the male-centric like structures of the churches. And it's like a conversation she's having with herself about what she's noticing in her surroundings. And she ultimately leaves that particular belief system and goes into a different belief system. It's funny because now, like, I would not identify as a Christian. And the reason I don't identify as a Christian is because I've never had truly, like, nothing really resonated with me that wasn't painful in Christianity, right? But I do believe in some of the things about Christianity. You know, but I also believe in some things from other religions. And, you know, I kind of have come to a piece about that it's not really about the label. I don't have to call myself a Christian to have to commune with the divine. The divine is available to us wherever we are and whoever we are. So that's sort of like where I've landed, but the Dance of the Dissident Daughter helped me to come to terms with some of what I was feeling at that time.
You know, I'm going to read that now as I got to put it on my list of things to read. I knew about that book. I love Sumun Kid. I've read mm-hmm. She wrote the one about the bees. It's that book. I can't remember it. But so, you know, I've read a couple of her books. So how would you describe your life today, Marcy?
Oh, I'm the happiest I've ever been. I'm fully authentically myself. My relationship with my children is more peaceful. I have a good relationship with my ex-husband. We're co-parenting very well now. My, you know, life itself is just really peaceful. And the relationship I'm in right now is for sure, hands down, a healing and beautiful place to be. And I would also just say that I lost a lot coming out, but I wouldn't change it for anything. Like, it's been so, so worth it. So, yeah.
Well, you know, the thing is that a lot of times we lose a lot, but it also opens up space in our lives for something so much better. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I lost a lot by coming out, but I wouldn't trade my life.
Nope.
Back for that. Like, if somebody would say, you know, if you can have absolutely everything you had back before you came out, I'd be like, nope, no thank you, I'm good.
Same.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Marcy. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for taking all of that happened and really turning it into a force of good.
Aw, thank you.
You've been listening to Coming Out and Beyond, LGBTQIA+ Stories with Anne-Marie Zanzel. New episodes of the Coming Out and Beyond podcast drop every other Friday. You can tune in at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and at annemariezanzel.com. Be sure to hit subscribe when tuning in so you never miss an episode. And for more resources, articles, videos, and a free downloadable guide for coming out later in life, visit annemariezanzel.com.